Hey everybody, good evening. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in. Breaking news as we begin the program. It looks like the Senate has reached some sort of a tentative agreement regarding the bailout or the loan, bridge loan, whatever you want to call it, to the two auto companies who say they desperately need it. We don't know the details yet, so we'll have to wait and see how many union members had to set themselves on fire on the steps of the U.S. Senate building in order to get this done. Because you know how much Republicans hate union members, right? So, I maybe they held some sort of lottery at the River Rouge Ford Motor Plant where a lot of UAW workers work. And, the four people who came up with the winning, quote-unquote, numbers had to immediately get on a plane, fly to the Senate office building, and douse themselves with gasoline and... What, you think that's a little bit too weird? Please. A little bit of other good news for workers tonight. In Minnesota, there has been a settlement announced today, a federal judge there. Is it a federal judge? I don't know. It may be a state judge. Anyway, some 100,000 current and former hourly employees at Walmart and Sam's Club stores in Minnesota, and the state of Minnesota itself, it has its hand out here too, will share up to $54 million. That's a settlement reached late yesterday. Well, actually, it was reached Tuesday. $54 million. This is because Walmart tried and succeeded in screwing workers for the past 10 years in Minnesota. Now, this agreement is the final stage in a wage and hour class action suit that brought attention to Walmart's practice of having employees work through their rest breaks, their meal breaks, no going to the bathroom. Sons of bitches. In July, the Dakota County District Judge Robert King ruled the company committed more than 2 million violations of the Minnesota Fair Labor Standards Act and ordered Walmart to pay these employees who were there because there was no other job available. Nobody goes to be a cashier or a greeter at Walmart if there's something else available. And see, Walmart understands that. So the judge ordered Walmart to pay $6.5 million in back pay, and the judge then scheduled a jury trial to figure out how much or the amount of civil penalties and punitive damages. Now, they reached a settlement. So the parties avoided going to trial. I wouldn't imagine Walmart wants to go to trial on this. People eligible for the settlement worked at Walmart stores and Sam Club's locations in Minnesota from September 11th, 1998, through a month ago, November 14th, 2008. The agreement, according to a statement released by one of the law firms representing the workers, the agreement includes, quote, a substantial payment to the state of Minnesota also, end quote. And again, quoting one of the attorneys for the workers, quote, we are satisfied with the settlement, gratified that these hourly workers will now be paid after 7 years of litigation. And we're also happy the state of Minnesota will receive the largest wage and hour civil penalty in its history. Now, what did the Walmart spokes thug, how did Walmart respond? Oh, listen, David Tovar, here's what he said. Quote, Walmart is pleased that the court in Minnesota ruled in its favor on many claims. Our policies are to pay every associate for every hour worked and to make rest and meal breaks available for associates. any manager who violates these policies is subject to discipline up to and including termination. We at Walmart remain committed to providing good jobs with real career opportunity to the 1.5 million U.S. associates who choose to work for Walmart and serve our customers every day, end quote. Okay? That's the statement from Walmart. Our policies are to pay, and we really take any manager who violates these policies at local stores, we put him through hell, or her through hell. But, in his ruling in July, Judge King found that Walmart repeatedly and willfully violated Minnesota labor laws or its contract with its employees on the issue of contractual rest breaks, statutory meal breaks, shaving time from paid rest breaks, and failure to maintain accurate records. In the decision, the judge found that Walmart, Inc. was aware that employees were not receiving breaks to which they were entitled. King said, in essence, the corporation put their heads in the sand. In testimony before Judge King, former Walmart workers described being forced to miss breaks so they could keep up with the work, even to the point of not being allowed to go to the bathroom. And Walmart issues a statement that, well, yeah, anytime we find anything like this, oh, well, the penalty is just hell. You know, if one of our local managers does this, you lying sons of bitches. Now, granted, $54 million settlement is, what is that, an hour's income for Walmart? Bastards. Kathy and I decided, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, never, under any circumstances, to shop at a Walmart, no matter what. And the only time we violated that was when we were in Mexico and we're up in the mountains or something, and I gashed my foot on a rock in a stream, you know, trying to play Tarzan the Jungle or whatever the hell I was doing. And we came back to the city, and sure enough, there was a Walmart. And I needed some hydrogen peroxide. Have you ever gone into, I speak enough Spanish to get by, but I don't know how you say peroxide in Spanish, hydrogen peroxide. So we went in the store, and I'm wandering up down the aisles, you know, limping up and down the aisles. I took the north portal, and she took the south portal, trying to find peroxide. And that's the only time we have ever, under any circumstances, shopped at a Walmart. I wouldn't go to Walmart to buy a bag of lemons if I was, you know, just dying of thirst and needed lemonade. I just wouldn't do it. I hate them. And I will until they finally allow their workers to unionize. Now, if that day comes, aside from the exploitation of a child, a labor all around the world, aside from all the egregious crimes they commit and the junk that they import and bring into this country to sell to people, most of us who just absolutely can't afford it, don't need it, don't want it, aside from all of that, if they would just allow their workers to unionize. Now, that's what this legislation that's being proposed is all about, to make it a little bit easier for would-be union employees to become union employees. Rather than go through some great big fal-de-ral with secret ballots, you just fill in a card. Yeah, I'd like to become a union member. End the story. And, of course, corporate America is painting that as, don't allow people to lose the right of a secret ballot. You duplicitous, hypocritical sons of bitches. You really are. You bastardize language. You deny your employees. I mean, who works at Walmart who makes a livable wage in a 40-hour work week? Who? And I maintain this. If there is a job in this country that requires 40 hours of work and doesn't pay a livable wage, the goddamn job ought to be abolished, or whoever did the hiring should be taken out and talked to. How did it come to pass that we can have people go to work for 40 hours a week and not be able to even to pay their rent and buy groceries or their mortgage payment and pay for a goddamn 5-year-old car? I'm angry already, and the program's only 15 minutes old. This is ridiculous. And this is supposed to be good news. $54 million settlement, huh? What is that? 5 minutes of Walmart profit? Bastards. Bastards!
The place to work now. I got friends with low wages. They work for Walmart in outrageously bad conditions. Don't get caught bitching.
Hey!
Their healthcare plan fits on two pages, so they're sick and tired and contagious. Yeah, I got friends with low wages. Now, one thing I've learned.
Working hard to put food on your family.
Twenty-one past the hour. Whatever happened to Huey Lewis in the news? Anybody know? They just went absolutely missing, didn't they? 22 almost past the hour. Okay, I'm sorry I got all riled up there. It's just so irritating, isn't it? Workers at Walmart, people, who really, unless it's a teenager, you know, some kid that wants a part-time job, or maybe a college student looking for a little extra income, who goes to Walmart? I mean, you don't go to your high school guidance counselor and you know, say, look, my big ambition is to be a checkout person at Walmart. What school should I go to do that? You know, working at Walmart is a default job. For everybody, it's a default job. So Walmart decides to screw those people. Just beat them to death, right? You can't take a break that you're entitled to by the state laws here in the state, that here in this instance, Minnesota. You can't have your meal breaks. You can't go pee. You're going to stay right where you are. And if you complain, I will fire you. I mean, can you make a better argument for unionized workforce than that little slice of idiocy that is magnified or repeated over and over? What did the judge find them? 2 million violations? Son of a bitch. There's a company that has no respect for the law whatsoever. It's like Donald Rumsfeld or Dick Cheney or David Addington or Irving Lewis Libby. Or the rest of these rat bastards, right? But this is the package you get when you get national socialism. This is what you get. This is it. Or corporatism. Call it what you want. Mussolini called it corporatism. Hitler called it national socialism. Pick one. It really doesn't matter. And when I see these stories about workers, just like the workers at the door and the window company in Chicago who finally got a settlement. They all will leave now with about $7,000 for 2 months worth of work, vacation pay, health benefits for 60 days. And is that a victory? It's better than nothing. And this is what so many of these corporations do in a corporatist society, while they are bleeding the system dead on the one hand. Take a look around. Who did this? Unions? Give me a goddamn break. Who brought us to where we are? The greed heads in government and in the corporate boardrooms. It wasn't some worker. But who's going to suffer now with all these cutbacks, huh? Who's going to suffer? You bet your ass you know who's going to suffer. Workers. And most of these workers are men and women in their 40s and 50s. What the hell are they going to do? Oh, we're going to retrain you. To do what? Well, we're going to teach you how to be a travel agent. Jesus God. I get so furious about this stuff. This is so unnecessary. But this is what capitalism does. Always, always, always see labor cost as a liability. Never see it. Never see it. No matter how productive the worker is, never see it as an asset. Always see it as a liability. And if you see it that way, then why keep the jobs here? These crazy bastards want $24 an hour. I can get a worker in Sri Lanka for $24 a month. So that's where I'm going to open my factory. And then like morons, when this junk comes back into the United States, we go buy it. Right? We go buy it. This is just crazy. So here we have, now we have a bunch of right-wing, nasty-ass Republicans in the Senate debating this and debating that. Who do you think they are really going to pressure, these Republican senators, for all the givebacks? Do you think it's going to be the engineers or the designers or the executives or, oh, well, we're going to make sure they don't get a bonus. Oh, give me a break. Who's going to take it in the chops? Who always takes it in the chops, huh? When something like this happens because of absolute mismanagement, who is the one whose blood winds up on the pavement out in front of the factory? That's right, the worker. Someday, I swear to God, someday, people who work for a living in this country, who work for wages, they're going to say, that's it. And there will be action that is so far overdue. All right, when we come back, these two white boys sitting around talking, Bill O'Reilly and Karl Rove, they say the economic crisis we're in right now, it's just a media conspiracy. Wait till I share this with you. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
She's wiser.
Neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Okay, we have this now on the bailout proposal in the Senate. There are some, Harry Reid says, good faith negotiations are going on as we speak. I guess if you go to C-SPAN, you can get this live. GM and Chrysler LLC are seeking billions of dollars to meet aid while Ford Motor Company wants a line of credit. A couple of paragraphs here. See, this is... Here you go. Provisions in here, all kinds of provisions put in here by the by these disgusting Republicans. Someone named Corker. What is he? A senator? Senator from where? Who's Corker? Corker is a. Hold on a second. Come on, you can wait a minute. The Corker plan. Corker. Who is Corker? Senate Republican. Yeah, Corker. I don't know who Corker is. I never heard of Corker. Anyway, Corker said, maybe he's not even in the Senate. What Corker says is the Corker alternative would require the companies to immediately bring unionized wages in line with scales at foreign competitors, mainly Japanese companies. that operate assembly and other plants. Japanese, Korean, and German manufacturers have or are building 18 auto assembly plants in the United States. None is unionized, and 11 are located in southern states. Corker must be from Tennessee. Yeah, he's at Senator Bob Corker. There he is, a Tennessee Republican. Yeah, I'll grant you loans. But God damn it, I'll tell you what. You know them old union boys and girls? See what I'm talking about? Who takes it in the neck every single time? So the condition for these filthy Republicans is to dump the wages. Now, don't send me emails and tell me that American auto workers are overpaid. No, they're not. The problem is the companies have to provide health care during the period of employment and for the rest of these workers' lives. That's where so much of the money is going. We need single-payer, government-sponsored health care in this country. When do you suppose corporate America is ever going to say, all right, that's enough, get it off our backs? When do you think? And it's already in place. It's called Medicare. Just open it up for anybody who wants to be in it. And if you're not in it, to hell with you. You don't get any. That's so simple, isn't it? And make the premium $50 a month or some ridiculously low figure. And then take all this money that we use to kill people, our people, Afghans, Iraqis. I don't know. Who else are we killing tonight, huh? Who else are we involved in killing? And switch all those assets into single-payer health care. Oh, it'd be so simple, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be so simple? But no, we're going to give billions to AIG. Time's going to come. I'm telling you, the time's going to come when the average American, the American worker, is going to say, you know what? You hear that noise? That's the noise of the back of a camel being broken. And here's the straw that did it. Where's my goddamn gun? I'm telling you, historically, I look at history. If you want to see examples of that, the Corker, Senator Bob Corker, yeah, Bob Corker of Tennessee. I'll tell you what. So every single wage earner at Ford, Chrysler, and GM, even though UAW, when was it, a year ago? They already agreed that they have two-tiered wages now for their union members. Unheard of! Unless you're in an apprentice, journeyman, master situation. But to work in a factory, these workers who were hired prior to a year ago or a year and a half ago, whenever it went into effect, they make what, $22, $23, $24 an hour. The new workers make $15, $16, $17. Now, you know what would be a real sharp stick up Bob Corker's anal opening? Would be if, you know, go ahead and let these 18 auto assembly plants that are being built in the United States. Well, some of them already have been built. But let them get all built. Let the workers all go to work. And then every single auto worker in America, I don't care who you work for, just walk off the job. What are they going to do? Huh? What are the Koreans and the Japanese and the Chinese and the Germans and the Swedes, whoever owns these companies, what are they going to do? Are they going to say, oh, son of a bitch, and bring over 500,000 workers? Let them all go on strike and say, okay, now, let's get serious. Let's all sit down here and get serious. Would you take your ass on an assembly line for $14 an hour for the next 30 years? Would you do that? And the answer will come back, well, no. Would you do it for 18? And no. Would you do it for 20? No. How about 25? All right, now you're getting in the ballpark. It's unbelievable. Oh, our economic affairs correspondent did some quick figuring here. Walmart brings in $16 billion a year, or $507 a second. In order to reach that $54 million profit, it's 29 and a half hours. Jesus, God. And the worker's been fighting that in Minnesota for 7 years. All right. Are there two crazier white people in this country than Bill Riley and Karl Rove? Thank God Keith Olbermann just reams O'Reilly out almost every single night now, and God knows he deserves it. But O'Reilly and Rove now, they were on the air the other night and said that all these rumors about cutbacks at your job, you know, that's a bat squeeze. It's a big media trick. None of this is happening. There were not 563,000 new people apply for unemployment compensation in the month of November. That didn't happen. The Bureau of Labor Statistics is lying. Corporate America is lying. When Bank America says we're going to lay off 20,000 people, it's a lie. And Karl Rove and Bill O'Reilly will explain it to you. Here's, let me see if I can do this. O'Reilly.
Okay, now the economy. Do you agree with me that the media is not the economy, but Afghanistan and Iraq and every other problem the United States has spinning as negative as possible now so they can buy Barack Obama some time and set up a thing where if anything goes right after he becomes president, they can jump on it?
That's a coherent sentence out of O'Reilly. Rove. Yes, O'Reilly. And then they can blame everything on Bush for quite a long period of time? Rove.
You know, it's interesting to me, this question of proportionality and consistency. I wanted to take you and your viewers back to March of 2000 when the stock market peaked out. We had a 38% decline in the Dow Jones. We had a 50% decline in the S&P 500. We had a 78% decline in the NASDAQ before the markets bottomed out. Now, I don't remember the New York Times or the National or the Washington Post or some of these national news organizations treating the precipitous decline in the markets under Clinton with the scare words they're using today. Similarly, look, and I don't want to diminish the challenges we face, particularly when it comes to unemployment. If you don't have a job, it's a 100% unemployment rate for you. But the unemployment rate today was at certain times during Clinton and in most of Carter time in office higher. And yet we don't see the similar scare tactics and the similar phrases and words out of the national media about these Democrats as we hear about the current situation. Could you get any of that? Okay. O'Reilly.
All right. So you're basically agreeing with me, then, that there is a conscious effort on the part of the New York Times and other liberal media to basically paint as drastic a picture as possible so that when Barack Obama takes office, that anything is better than what we have now? Rove.
Yes. And watch their words when they describe the steps that he wants to take. I noticed again this past weekend, he described this enormous program of spending on infrastructure, on roads and highways and improvements in our infrastructure. And watch how they treat this when he comes into office, if he actually pursues this package. And you'll see very few of them raising serious questions about what kind of stimulative effect it's really going to have. Because what do we know is on these kinds of big projects? Only one out of every $4 that's appropriated for them gets spent in the first year. The rest of it gets spent in the out year. So these are not going to have an immediate impact. And let's see how tough they treat him on this and how much they hold him up to scrutiny.
O'Reilly. Now you know how that's going to come down, Mr. Rove.
Rove. We can always hope. We can always.
O'Reilly. Well, see, I know hope. All I want is an honest press. I'm not hoping one way or the other. Now, could you make any sense out of that? These two disgusting piles of white man excrement sitting there talking. I mean, here are two guys who have about as much interest in the survival or the flourishing of this country as they do in getting a serious case of the crabs off the toilet seat in a public bathroom. They couldn't care less. But this pasty Pillsbury doughboy looking Karl Rove, oh, this guy makes me embarrassed to be a Caucasian. Sitting there saying, well, yeah, you know, if the New York Times or the National or the Washington Post, you know, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it was all Clinton's fault. It was all Clinton's fault, right? I better stop yelling. I'm sorry.
You're gonna spread your wings. You're gonna retake the sky. But until that morning, they're gonna work you for peanuts.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
9 before the hour. Okay, you can go to HueyLewis.com and get the whole thing. I don't know. I just kind of lost track of them. I like their music. I really did. Mark writes in about Senator Corker. Mike, Corker is the guy who ran against Harold Ford back in 06. He was the source of those ads that said, "Call me Harold," with the white chick in them. Ford, of course, is black. Corker is also a shill for Nissan. They have a plant in Smyrna, Tennessee. Oh, that Corker. Call me Harold. Sons of bitches. Right out of the Jesse Helms school of let's all go back to being dirty 1950s racists, right? Skip writes in, Mike, in union companies versus non-union auto assembly plants, the workers in union plants make about $2 an hour more. I guess what Skip's referring to here is the new deal that UAW now has for, that two-tiered thing, new workers coming in. The CEO of Ford, Skip writes, made about $22 million last year and lost billions of dollars for the company. The CEO of Toyota USA made $1 million and the company made billions. Yeah, I don't know if Skip's numbers are right, but that sounds right to me. That sounds right to me. Isn't that the way it goes? Huh? Well, I guess there's some talk, and that's all it is talk, just cheesy-ass cheap talk about restricting those big executive salaries and no bonuses unless they actually earned them. And, that's garbage talk. But let's make sure that the worker gets it right in the neck. Let's get in the way of the worker. That's goddamn unions. They're the ones who did it. Unions. Down here in Smyrna, Tennessee, at the Nissan plant, we don't have no union. We got a bunch of happy workers. Kathy writes, when I was preparing financial statements for people in the early to mid-80s, I saw that unionized workers at the local Mercury Marine plant were making over $18 an hour and had excellent benefits. They were considered middle class, and no one begrudged them their wages. Most people wanted to have wages like that. Fast forward to 2008, 25 years later. Now our illustrious senators think that people who make $14 to $18 an hour are overpaid and should be grateful for worthless 401k plans and health insurance that doesn't cover much of anything. Working people's standard of living has decreased radically, and if there are two adults in a family, both of them have to work to make ends meet. How a single-parent household survives, I'll never know. These people who make more money than God and complain that we make too much, don't get me started. And regarding the unemployment rate, Kathy writes, O'Reilly and Roe forgot to tell you that the unemployment rate under Carter and during some of Clinton's administration was calculated differently. Now people are considered employed if they work a few minutes a week. And then she has a rather colorful expletive deleted. Thank you, Kathy. In Green Bay. Kathy in Green Bay, Wisconsin. One of the, I think it's one of the harder hit areas economically in the country. I don't know. Journal Constitution headline, not headline, but above the fold, front page today. The housing market in Georgia is in a depression. And they take great pains to say no. Not recession, depression. And then they said there are enough empty, what was it? Was it houses, Kathy? To handle expected requirements for homes in North Georgia, or all of Georgia, for the next 117 months. What is that? Just under 10 years? I can drive 5 miles away from the Molloy compound here and see 10, 12, houses where, foreclosed homes. And these are not $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 homes. I don't live in that kind of an area. These are homes that people probably bought for anywhere from $180,000 to maybe $250,000. But Karl Rove and Bill O'Reilly have it all figured out, don't they? Wouldn't you like to just sit down with one of these two clowns and have a conversation? Especially with O'Reilly. Well, you know, he's a pretty tall guy. What do you think it would take to set O'Reilly off? You know, if not much, because he's one of these egomaniacal freaks. What do you think it would take to set him off? I'd love to do that. I'd just absolutely love to provoke him. Oh. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? I don't know. All right, when we come back after the break, a suggestion from our economic advisor, Bruce Enberg, that everybody buy a couple of long-handled shovels. You want to know why? Well, then stick around. Oh, you're such a tease, Molloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. All right, before we get to this, buy a couple of long-handled shovels, email from Greg in Des Moines. I'm going to have to bleep a lot of this, Greg. Dear Mike! Didn't have to bleep any of that. I keep hearing that the auto workers make $75 an hour. We know that is not true, but we do know that Blackwater mercenaries make much more than that and much more than U.S. soldiers. Why in the blank can't we renegotiate mercenary contracts to the wage that a Philippine mercenary makes? And as far as the traitor of Southern senators, if the U.S. auto manufacturers go down, and then their suppliers, and then merchants and bankers that the auto workers spend their money with, and then unemployment ripples through the rest of the country, who do the Southern senators think is going to buy their cars? The Saudis? I don't think I would want to be at my plantation home or my foreign factory office when a million auto workers who are hungry and out of money come knocking. I think these Southern blanks are nuts. After the Depression and the smoking foreign car fires, do the Republicans think they're going to get reelected? All I need to hear now is a blanking Southern senator say, "Bring it on." Greg in Des Moines. Yeah, the it's people listening around the country, people listening here in the South. It's not out of line or unfair to attack these white Southern senators who are screwing with a simple little, and it is simple, and it is little. And I've got mixed feelings about it. But after studying this as best I can in my limited way, because I'm like you, okay? I don't know how all this crap works either. All I know is that auto workers used to have good jobs and, oh, never mind. So I don't know how all of this works, but I do know that these Southern white, that's kind of redundant, isn't it? These Southern senators who have spent the past 100 years making certain that the union movement did not get a toehold here in the South, whether it was the textile industry, which is now gone, whether it was the, just pick an industry here in the South that has been just absolutely gone. And during the time when these industries did exist in the South, there were no union representation, no nothing for the workers. And what was the payoff to the workers here in the South, the non-unionized workers? A finger right in the eye. When the companies moved to Mexico and then China and now Vietnam, entire industries died here in the South. There was no union representation there either. So these Southern senators who pride themselves on making sure that those communist unions don't come down here. I mean, we let the niggers go free. That's enough. God damn it. We're not going to have. And that was a communist plot, too, you know. You know, Martin Luther King, he got trained at a communist camp up here in the mountains in North Carolina. You knew that, didn't you? You didn't? Oh, well, hell. It's bad enough having the niggers get free. There ain't no reason for them to be free. But we damn sure ain't going to let the unions come in here. Now, that's been the attitude down here for decades. And if you live here, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So, once again, these white Southern screwballs have power way, way inappropriate to who they are and who they represent. Over the rest of the country. Well, not for much longer, you little bastards. Not for much longer. Have I mentioned? Yeah, I have. Never mind. All right, our economic affairs correspondent writes in, "Hey, Mike. The Federal Reserve is floating a scheme to issue its own bonds instead of the Treasury doing it. It's not clear what they're up to. A lack of transparency is probably exactly what they have in mind. Bonds are the traditional haven for investors when they fear deflation. This explains why the yield on some Treasury notes have reached a low not seen since 1940. This means bonds are very popular, but at the same time, the credit default swap rate for U.S. bonds is 6 times what it was a few months ago, meaning investors are afraid the United States will default. The dollar is starting to decline sharply against all other currencies, and this is driving up commodities as investors begin to flee the dollar. The question is, if this is just a yo-yo rebound, or are we starting in on the final round of hyperinflation before the deflation collapse? Those who hold a rosy view about the prospects of deflation is that the $8 trillion the Fed handed out has got to go somewhere, sparking counterinflation. Yet prominent international investors hold the view that the big U.S. banks, the people who presumably got the trillions, although no one knows if they did, that they hold the view that the big U.S. banks are not loaning money because they are totally bankrupt. Meanwhile, the Senate Republicans are determined to bring us into the post-civilization era. They seem to believe that the middle class will march obediently into serfdom, and the poor and elderly will just starve quietly. Obama says things will get much worse before they get better. Take him seriously. Oh, while you're out buying canned goods, buy a couple of long-handled shovels. They're good for a lot of things. Digging latrines when the water is rationed. Building a fire break when the fire department stops coming. Oh, and you can avoid using the mass grave down at the soccer field if you can dig one yourself. Prairie 2. Oh, and P.S. This is regarding the email I read last night about Bush did do one thing good, and that was to create this wildlife reserve in the Pacific. Prairie 2 adds, Bush did create a huge reserve in the western Pacific, western Hawaiian Islands, an area so remote they couldn't figure out how to exploit it. Of course, that's the part of the Pacific that has the billions of tons of floating plastic that's breaking up into smaller and smaller pieces and is expected to destroy the entire food chain. You know, any time I just even get part of a sense of maybe we'll get through this, I get an email from Prairie 2, and I just want to go back to finding a razor blade, you know, so I can open up a vein. But that's what the truth will do to you. You see, that's it's hard to handle the truth. You can't handle the truth. Yeah, I know that feeling. I know that feeling. There's a good evolutionary explanation for denial. There really is. I mean, without denial, how in the hell would the human race have ever gotten to the point where we're walking upright and figuring out ways how to further screw ourselves? So I don't know about you, but I spend most of my day comfortably in denial, pretending that, no, everything is okay, until you start to realize that everything is not okay. I miss this stuff. I watched two network news shows tonight. At 6:30 Eastern Time, I watched NBC Nightly News, and at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, I watched ABC Nightly News. On neither program, did it mention what was reported by the Washington Post today. A bipartisan Senate report released today says that former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and other top Bush administration officials are directly responsible for the torture of detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And the report charges that decisions by those officials led to the serious offenses against prisoners in Iraq and elsewhere. All right, now that's the lead to the article in the Washington Post. That's it. A bipartisan Senate report released today says that Rumsfeld and top Bush administration officials are directly responsible for crimes against humanity, war crimes, violation of federal law, the Geneva Conventions, and not a mention of it on the nightly news. I have more of this as soon as we get back. Stay with me. When they took my only son from me, I saw it on TV. I know it's true. Oh, so true.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It is 21 past the hour. So the Washington Post reports today on a bipartisan Senate report released today that says Donald Rumsfeld and other top Bush administration officials are directly responsible for abuse of detainees at Guantanamo. And the report says that decisions by these officials led to serious offenses against prisoners in Iraq and elsewhere. It goes on to say, the article in the Post goes on to say, the Senate Armed Services Committee report accuses Rumsfeld and his deputies of being the principal architects of the plan to use harsh interrogation techniques on captured fighters and terrorism suspects, which rejects the Bush administration's contention that the policies originated lower down the command chain. Well, we knew that, didn't we, truth seekers? There is nobody anywhere in the CIA or the United States military that steps outside the chain of command and decides to start goddamn torturing people. It doesn't work that way. You know it. I know it. The world knows it. But Bush kept insisting, instead of Rumsfeld. They lied through their teeth. Bill Clinton lied about... How come I can't say that word? Bill Clinton lied about little oral sex, and they impeached him. These sons of bitches lied, and hundreds of thousands of people have died. And nothing. Absolutely nothing. The report says, quote, this is one of the concluding sentences. Quote, the abuse of detainees in U.S. custody cannot simply be attributed to the actions of a, quote, few bad apples, unquote, acting on their own. The fact is that senior officials in the United States government solicited information on how to use these techniques. They redefined the law to create the appearance of their legality and authorized their use against detainees. The report was based on a nearly two-year investigation. It was released by Senators Carl Levin and John McCain. The report said that both the policies and resulting controversies tarnished the reputation of the United States and undermined national security. Think about that. Undermined national security. These bastards undermined national security. The report said, quote, those efforts damaged our ability to collect accurate intelligence that could save lives, strengthened the hand of our enemies, and compromised our moral authority, end quote. McCain said in a statement, quote, the committee's report details the inexcusable link between abusive interrogation techniques used by our enemies who ignored the Geneva Convention and interrogation policy for detainees in U.S. custody. End quote. White House officials have maintained the measures were approved in response to demands from field officers who complained that traditional interrogation methods weren't working on some of the more hardened captives, which we know now, of course, is an absolute lie. We have the testimony of Matthew Alexander, which is a pseudonym, a former interrogator for the CIA. It goes on here, the true genesis of the decision to use torture, the report said. Only, you know, they call it coercive techniques. I'm not going to get involved here in mealy-mouthed substitute words. The true genesis of the decision to use torture was a memo signed by George Bush on February 7, 2002, declaring that the Geneva Convention standards for humane treatment did not apply to captured al-Qaeda and Taliban fighters. Of course, they had no idea who they were rounding up. Some of the so-called Taliban and al-Qaeda fighters were cab drivers and camel herders who were grabbed by militia gangs and told the stupid Americans, give me reward, here! As early as that spring, this investigative panel said, top administration officials, including National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, participated in meetings in which the use of torture was discussed. The panel drew on a wartime statement by Rice, released earlier this year, to support that conclusion. There's more here, and I want to share some more with you when we come back, because one of the things that really is interesting to me is what the model was for the torture techniques that Bush and Rumsfeld and these bastards all authorized, what the model was. No, it wasn't the Spanish Inquisition, although, yeah, it was used then. But wait till you hear this. Stay with us. Destruction
can't be easy to defend when all your heroes have abandoned you, or have you abandoned them? From civilians to enemies, bombs can't discern. They just destroy all in their path. Will we ever learn? How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless killing spree? How many kids can you kill and send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV?
Sometimes I'm happy, you know, this is...
But wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
So during that war, the non-joyous times that Bush is talking about, he and his top lieutenants decided that torture would be okay. On February 7, 2002, the Bush bastard signed a memo declaring that the Geneva Convention standards for humane treatment did not apply in his little war of opportunity. Now, I think I'm going to sign a memo here in Georgia that says the laws about red lights do not apply to me. That I will pull up to an intersection, look both ways, make sure that there's a hole in the traffic that I can scoot through, and then let the chumps wait for the green light. Because, Bush has set a wonderful example here. This criminal son of a bitch has decided, I'll write a memo. What will the children think? Remember all that talk about Clinton and Monica? What will the children think? What will the children think? Maybe some of the children, you know, the ones that are 13, 14, 15, 12, will think, well, I think I'll just write a memo to my principal that says it's okay for me to carry reefer into school. I think I'll write a memo to the police when they bust my young ass that says, oh, wait a minute, Ossifer, I'm only smoking pot because I wrote a memo that said I can do it. That's what my president has done. Oh, no. That kind of stuff only applies to Democrats who have oral sex with their girlfriends, right? In July 2002, 4 months later, Rumsfeld's senior staff began compiling information about techniques used in military survival schools to simulate conditions that U.S. airmen might face if captured by an enemy that did not follow the Geneva conditions. You get that? Rumsfeld's staff began compiling information about the kind of torture techniques that countries that give the middle finger to the Geneva conventions might use on downed U.S. airmen. Those techniques, borrowed from a training program known as Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape, or SEER, S-E-R-E, SEER, included simulated drowning and were based on methods adopted by Chinese communists to coerce propaganda confessions from captured U.S. soldiers during the Korean War. That's where Bush and Rumsfeld and Cheney and Libby and Addington and you and Gonzalez and... Who was the one that bathed himself in oil, Kathy? Ashcroft. That's where these sons of bitches got the idea, and that's what they used as their model. The techniques used by the North Koreans against downed U.S. airmen back in the 50s. In order to torture out of them propaganda confessions. In other words, not real confessions. My God. The SEER program, S-E-R program, became the template for interrogation methods that were ultimately approved by Rumsfeld himself, according to the report. In the field, U.S. military interrogators use the techniques without oversight and frequently abusive results, the Senate panel found. And let's see, what was the young woman's name who went to prison? Christy England, was it? No, what was her name? Lindy, was it Lindy England, who I believe is out? England. And her, obviously, psychopathic boyfriend, but the report also said, quote, it is particularly troubling that senior officials approved the use of interrogation techniques that were originally designed to simulate abusive tactics used by our enemies against our own soldiers and were modeled on tactics used by the communist Chinese to elicit false confessions from U.S. military personnel, end quote. So, as you read that, or as you listen to it, as I read it, I think to myself, okay, this is what the Chi-Coms did, not just the Chinese communists during the Korean War, but also North Korean communists. These were the tactics used to get false confessions. So these brain-dead, murderous sons of bitches in the Bush crime family decide to use the same techniques to get the same results? So why are we having trials based on confessions that were elicited using techniques designed to get false confessions? Will somebody answer that for me, please? Oh, my God. Members of this panel cited the views of General David Petraeus, now the head of U.S. Central Command, who in a May 2007 letter to his troops said humane treatment of prisoners allows Americans to occupy the moral high ground. Petraeus said, quote, our values and the laws governing warfare teach us to respect human dignity, maintain our integrity, and do what is right. Adherence to our values distinguishes us from our enemy. But none of that mattered, you see. Setting aside the complete, I want to use the word idiocy, but that's too mild a word, of establishing rules for what to do when you're engaged in massive killing of people on the battlefield and keep people in cities, civilians. You know, there are certain rules. We can firebomb Dresden. We can drop white phosphorus on Fallujah. And we can drop nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But if we take prisoners, we can't do A, B, C, and D. And they can't do A, B, C, and D to us. Jesus Christ, that's insane, isn't it? But that's where we live. That's the insanity that we accept if we're going to see war as an extension of diplomacy. So there are rules. I know a lot of the Geneva Conventions were written after World War II. I understand. But that didn't stop us from dropping Willie Peter all over Fallujah, did it? And turning the civilian population into fireballs for, you know, a few minutes until the flesh melted off their bodies. The whole thing is madness. It's all madness. It's insanity. It's insane. So Rumsfeld and Ashcroft, and you, and Gonzalez, and Bush, and Cheney, all of these people authorized torture techniques used by the Chinese communists in the Korean War to elicit false confessions. It says it in the report. False confessions from U.S. military personnel. Son of a bitch. Now, let me ask you something. Supposing you're serving your country in uniform right now and your country happens to be the United States, or you think you're serving your country. You're not. You're serving corporate America. But let's play along. you're out there, your entire body, not just your ass, but your entire body is on the line. Chances are you're going to lose an arm or a leg or both. Chances are you might get half of your skull blown away and the chunks of brain tissue underneath that. Chances are you're going to be severely wounded. What happens if you are captured? And you are held by people who believe that the United States is a degenerate demon from hell because we torture people. What's going to happen to you, Sergeant, Lieutenant, Colonel? What's going to happen? This is what these sons of bitches have done to the U.S. military. They have put every single soldier at risk. Should our soldiers come home? Hell yes. But they're not home. They're somewhere else. Every single American military person is at dire risk tonight because of Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and you and Gonzalez and Ashcroft and Addington and Libby, right down the list of these goddamn Nazi criminals. Now, why aren't they going to be put on trial? Why? And tonight on two network newscasts, not a word about this report. Released by Senator Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, and Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona.
We take lives when we have to protect the people. That's how I look at it. We were young together, we were on the ball. We did not believe in the writing on the wall. We did our best work in the dark, we did our thinking on the run.
You know, the torture thing to me and the putting the entire U.S. military at risk. And not that not just the U.S. military. I mean, Daniel Berg was not the Wall Street Journal reporter. He was not part of the U.S. military. The list goes on and on. This is what the Bush crime family has done. I mean, seriously, every time I stop and think, really, come on, Malloy, just try. Try to step outside your absolute baseline hatred of these people, these Republicans, and this administration. Is there one thing that they've done that has not corrupted this country? And were I religious, I would take a religious oath. I would say something like, I swear before God, may my soul rot in hell, eaten for all eternity by snakes, scorpions, and spiders, if I'm lying. But no, not one thing has the Bush crime family done that would in any way benefit this country or respect this country or enhance this country. This has been like a gang of marauders who have just scythed their way through every single institution in this country and destroyed it. And I get so mad at Al Gore, because if Al Gore would have said, no, God damn it, count the votes. If Al Gore would have said, hey, to the 50 million people that voted for me. Let's go to the streets. They're trying to steal the election. But no. Bush never should have had administration number one, much less the second time. This whole thing. Now, we, you know, I've said before, one vote on the Supreme Court, 5-4, stop the counting, it's Bush's. One vote on the Supreme Court screwed the country, possibly permanently. And I say that so that I don't think that one man, the Democratic nominee for President Al Gore, screwed the country when he refused to fight. I don't know what his reason was. But what if he would, I know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, might as well talk about, I don't know, unicorns dancing inside your eyeballs, right? But what if Al Gore would have said no, absolutely no, it's not stopping here. Count the votes. What if the Democrats would have sent bully boys down to kick the slimy asses of all those Republican congressional aides that went to Palm Beach County and started beating on windows and doors? Supposing about 500 of us would have picked up baseball bats and went down there and said, sons of bitches, you got 10 seconds to get away from the vote counters. And if you don't, we're coming at you. But we didn't do that. And look where we are. Look where we are. So I don't know who to blame. The one vote on the Supreme Court that tipped it to Bush? Or Al Gore? Or my own damn self? There are Catholic priests and nuns who have attacked missile silos because they knew it was the right thing to do. I sat on my ass and didn't even go to Palm Beach County and beat the living Christ out of some of these right-wing bully boys. And neither did you. Every year down here at the School of the Americas where they teach people to torture, old ladies who are members of religious orders, Catholic nuns, every year they cross the line and step onto the U.S. military reservation as an act of faith. And they go to jail, prison, federal. And I didn't have the courage to pick up a baseball bat or a goddamn rifle and go down to Palm Beach County 8 years ago and say, no, you're not stealing my country. You're not going to do it. And neither did Al Gore. So, I don't know. Blame, I'm looking for, oh, well, Mike, don't blame. Oh, that was 8 years ago. Yeah, I know. Don't blame. Of course not. Let's move on. Nothing to see here. Look what's happened. And I think about that a lot. I wouldn't give it a second thought. I don't think. I know myself pretty well at my age. I don't think I would really dwell on that except for the fact that I'm in the business that I'm in. If I had some other business, or if, like most people my age, I didn't have to work anymore. But that's not the case with me. You know, I'll work till I'm in my 80s probably just to pay the bills. But if I weren't in this business, I don't think I would have that sense of awareness like, hey, what did you do, Malloy? What did you do? You knew it was being stolen. You were on the air. What did you do? And that's, you know, I'm just telling you, that's sometimes when I think about that, I get, well, you think about something that's really embarrassing, you're all by yourself, and all of a sudden you feel yourself flush. Huh? Right? Huh? Ever happen? That happens to me every once in a while. I start thinking about that. My palms get sweaty. I feel my face get hot. I'm in the car all by myself. You know, maybe going in to pick up Molly at preschool or whatever. I think, okay, well, what are you going to do in your program tonight? Oh, that's right. You're going to go in your program tonight and bitch about how bad it is. But what did you do 8 years ago when it was clear that it was being stolen? What did Al Gore do? That's it, Malloy. You and Al Gore. What did the two of you do? Nothing. I hope we get out of this. We're going to take some phone calls. The number is 800-989-1480. Join me if you like. 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Absorb the news here. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. It's about 7 past the hour. According to the Associated Press, if you listen online, you probably heard it on the AP News here. Republicans walked out of a closed-door meeting in trying to temporarily solve this problem with the auto industry. They said no federal aid unless the UAW. The union workers agreed to slash their own wages next year to bring them in line with those of Japanese car maker workers. The union said, we'll slash our wages, but not until 2011. That's when our current contract expires. So these filthy goddamn Republicans walked out. Republican Senator Voinovich of Ohio, who supported the bailout, said the UAW was willing to make the cuts, but not until 2011. Harry Reid, who the Senate Majority Leader, who was working with this, said the bill's collapse is, quote, a loss for the country. He added, quote, I dread looking at Wall Street tomorrow. It's not going to be a pleasant sight, end quote. Senator Chris Dodd, Democrat, Connecticut, Banking Committee Chairman, who led the negotiation, said, quote, in the midst of already deep and troubling economic times, we're about to add to that by walking away, end quote. And this pissant Bob Corker of Tennessee, the senator from Tennessee, the point man in the talks, the Republican point man, said the UAW's refusal to agree to wage concessions in 2009 kept them apart. Oh, boy. The Associated Press says it's not immediately clear how the auto aid measure talks might be resurrected. This is what the Republicans have done. This is what a handful of Senate Republicans have done. Now, I don't know how the New York Stock Exchange is going to, Stock Exchange is going to react to this tomorrow. The NASDAQ or the rest of these markets, how it's going to react, how they are going to react. But it can't be good, can it? What's going to happen? Anybody have any ideas? The UAW was willing to make the concessions, but the Republicans said, no, you got to make them now, you union bastards. My God. It's going to happen. You know it's going to happen eventually. Now, I don't know where money can be gotten. It's my understanding today, I heard on one of the cable news shows that General Motors had already hired a firm of attorneys who specialize in bankruptcy protection. If they go into bankruptcy protection, let's use GM, Chapter 11, I think what that means is First of all, the contract with the union can be broken. Payments into the union pension funds gone, whether it covers retirement or medical. This is what the Republicans, this has been the goal since Reagan, to absolutely bust the unions, to bust them down where they cannot come back. And the last stronghold, the last true stronghold of union power in this country was the UAW. And the way the conventional wisdom is being shifted by these right-wing sons of bitches who own the airwaves in this country, shifted onto the backs of union workers. If you have any sense, any brains left, if you haven't been completely sucked into this Orwellian newspeak, you know that's not true. You know it's not true. So here we are. What's going to happen tomorrow morning? How would you like to be an auto worker right now with a mortgage and a kid in college and a kid in high school, and your spouse has a job that doesn't begin to equal your wages, and you got a little health insurance? We had some of that UAW health insurance when 6 years ago. When we worked 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when we worked for IE America Radio Network that was owned by the UAW. And we had Michigan Blue Cross Blue Shield. And it was damn good health insurance, a lot better than what we've got now. But what's going to happen to the families? There's a part of the health insurance, well baby health insurance, where you can take your kid for exams, and there's no copay because what you're doing is preventing your child from getting sick. What's going to happen now? I wonder what's going on in the union halls in Flint and Detroit and Toledo and Cleveland and Akron and Youngstown and Grand Rapids and Des Moines and at the Bowling Green, Ohio, not Kentucky, Lansing. What's going on in the union halls right now? Because you know these guys and these women have gotten the news. An absolute panic. I just wonder how, God bless them, how they can handle this panic that they must feel right now. You mean that a handful of white Southern senators have let the entire industry go? They want us to bleed to death right on the streets. 2 weeks before Christmas. It could be 2 weeks before the 4th of July. It doesn't matter. In the mini blog I wrote the other day, you know, I asked the Reagan Democrats, how does it feel? How does it feel? You know, I happen to know that an awful lot of Union Democrats voted Reagan, switched over to the Republican thing. Why did you people do that? What is wrong with you? They will cut your throat. They have cut your throat. And they're laughing at you. Laughing at you. Because of what you did in 1980. And 84. And 88. And 2000. And 2004. Jesus God, what is wrong in this country? So here we are. A handful of white Southern Republicans, senators, have just cut the legs out from under not just the 2 or 3 million workers who are going to be affected by this, but the entire economy. Now what do we say? What are we supposed to do? What? Son of a bitch. I mean, this is pretty hard to absorb. God, I hate Republicans. They have destroyed everything. They continue to destroy it. They seem to have this incredible death wish. God, I'd like to help them. Oh, I'd like to help them. I swear I would. But they want to take the country down with them. Why? What do you bastards gain from doing this? If the suppliers go out of business, what do you think's going to happen in your Honda plant, in your Toyota plant, in Tennessee and Kentucky and Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia? Where do you think those parts are going to come from? Oh, that's right. Korea, Vietnam, China, Japan. And who's going to buy your Hondas and your Toyotas and your Mitsubishis, huh? Who's going to do that? Who's going to buy them? What are they going to use for money? Where are they going to get the financing? You stupid sons of bitches.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirt? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play.
Your host for a Korean future, it's Mike Malloy.
It ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
You know, I'm starting to get a little bit nervous. And you remember what Barack Obama said when things, you know, during the campaign, when things get weird like this, people out here in the boondocks, like where I live, they turn to our religion and our guns. Well, I don't have any religion. I think that's a joke. But I've got the other thing. And I just, you know, it seems like nobody can figure out that the Republicans are trying to kill us all. They're trying to kill our children. They're trying to make us homeless. They're trying to kill our old people. They're trying to kill everybody. Now, I don't know what their motive is, except for the fact that they're crazy sons of bitches, and half of them are just sucked into some kind of a twisted configuration with their sick religion. But why do we keep letting this happen? I mean, what are the rules in the Senate, for Christ's sake, that say when something passes in the House by the huge majority to give a bridge loan, call it whatever you want, to a major industry and a handful of suck. Be careful, Mike. A handful of these sons of bitches from here in my part of the country can murder the whole thing.
Nah, we ain't gonna do it. We ain't gonna do it, God damn it. Hell no, we ain't gonna do it.
And then everything collapses. How is that possible? Is that what representative government is all about? Is that what freedom and democracy and the Constitution, blah, 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 is that what it's all about? That three or four of these pig bastards can do this? Can just bring an entire industry? I don't care about the mismanagement. We are where we are. Woulda, shoulda, coulda my ass. What about going forward? There is no going forward. The Republicans said, nah, we're going to stop at him because we like these Toyotas and Hondas and these factories down here in our part of the country. I don't give a goddamn about Detroit. Just a bunch of niggers run that place anyhow. Nah, I ain't going for it. Phew. I mean, that's what it is. You think I'm mocking these people? That's what they talk like. Or that's how they talk or something. I'm way too pissed off. It's just incredible. Just incredible. Kathy, regarding these Southern senators, she writes, are even more stupid than they sound, because once the companies that supply American automakers close their doors, what happens to their foreign car manufacturers? Do they really think that those suppliers only supply American automakers? And what about industries that don't make cars or pickup trucks, but make things like, oh, I don't know, fire trucks? How will the lack of suppliers affect that industry? And what about other vehicles, like the ones that the military uses, or airports, or cement companies? These stupid senators don't seem to get that the economy is interrelated. Kathy, who these days only admits that she's from Tennessee when she's tortured. Well, this is how these Republican senators strike back. It's like the death throes of a wounded rabid dog or a poisonous snake. These Republicans know that it's over for the Republican Party, so they have to do what their senile leader Ronald Reagan charged them with doing: destroy the working class, destroy it. I really am a little bit worried tonight. I really am. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back, take your phone calls. I'm talked out, man. I really am talked out. This was a blow. I was hoping that before the program was over tonight, that these senators would get their heads out of their asses and realize what they had to do and would step up and do it. And look what they've done. Look what they've done. I wonder what's going to happen tomorrow. I wonder what's going to happen with the stock market and the bond market and the financial markets tomorrow. Well, everybody just considers the idea that a couple, 3-4 million people may be out of work within the next 3 months. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Before the hour, Greg writes in, Mike, the Democrats got their ass kicked every single time by Bush or the Republicans. Democrats sign on to everything. The White House, the Republicans want. When the Democrats want something, the Republicans shut off the lights and leave the room. Obama should be on the phone right now telling all these Southern rebels that he had planned on allowing the Bush tax cuts to expire naturally, but if they don't want to help the auto industry, he will repeal the tax breaks for the rich and then increase the taxes on the rich January 20th. He needs to use his courage and play hardball and tell them that come January 20th, the retribution will be 100-fold on the South's foreign interests. He should tell them that he will use all the new powers to tap the phones of the rebels and sign statements that apply only to these blank blanks in the South. But I am afraid the Democrats and Obama will just take it on the chin and try to get along come January 20th. Hell, maybe Obama will even ask one of the Southern senators to join his administration. I voted for Obama, but I would prefer Bernie Sanders. Kucinich or Nader. If one of them were the president-elect, they would be calling us to arms. Greg, I don't know, man. Somebody else sent me an email that said the futures market, here it is. Barry in Oregon writes, if the current market futures are indication, the Dow is set to open down 350 and the NASDAQ will open down 53. Where it goes from there is anybody's guess. Maybe some bargain hunters will step in and prop the markets up. Right now, the Nikkei and the Hang Seng are down 6% and 7% respectively. Me, I'm cracking open another beer. Barry. Yeah. God. All right. Let's do some phone calls, as promised. Jeremy is calling from Lancaster, PA, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm wallowing in the same guilt that you were referring to earlier.
I don't know. I don't know how to avoid it. Like I say, I think denial is a great ego defense mechanism. But I can't do it anymore.
I think I fell for it, like you were just alluding to there, where we all were trying to get along and prove we weren't such bad people, the people whose judgment on moral character and worth in this world was grossly skewed by their monetary interests.
I think you're right.
I'm a practicing Christian. I call myself the Christian radical left, I guess, because I think it's a good model, you know, but I do not believe.
Well, I still have respect for you folks. I mean, the Christian radical left has done an awful lot of good at various times in various countries and so on and so forth. I am so down on the Armageddonist right wing Christians, I can hardly contain it, but. People like Father Bourgeois, people like, you know, you say your belief is, I have respect for that. I really
do. Well, I'm a very loyal listener, and I think you would find that we agree with 99% of each other's thoughts. I feel that, even the way that you have occasion to disparage organized religion, I actually agree with the context in which you describe it. So I feel like at 37, I had my shot. I was in my late 20s, but I had young kids. And my friends, my younger people that I was around were part of the Smoketown Six, which was arrested for impersonating the Abu Ghraib atrocities when Bush visited Lancaster County. I had another former employee who was arrested at American University for laying in front of the motorcade, impersonating a dead soldier in Iraq. And while I lauded their efforts, I really didn't hit the streets till 2004. I just told my wife, I said, I have to do this. I have to protest, but it was much on a local level. And I feel like, you know, I'm an independent business person. I don't know where this poppycock comes around from with folks saying that the independent business person is going to absorb this tremendous tax burden under Democrats. 66% of us don't even pay taxes. You know, we qualify within the confines of the law not to pay them. And the other 34, very few of whom make $250,000 a year. It's all crap. The miscegenation of church and state in this country has been a disaster. I agree with Thomas Jefferson wholeheartedly. Religious leaders have a place in the community, as do political leaders. And the way that they have hit it as a religious buffet to suit the needs or better still greed of a few, it's appalling. And I might let you make the following statement that were I such a judgmental person as I find them to be, they'll burn in hell based on their own standards.
I hear that. I hear that loud and clear. If some of these people want to come up with these constructs that are used as punishment and reward systems based on how we live our lives, they better be aware that those constructs apply to them too. You know what I'm saying? Of course you
agreed.
Yeah. And all right, Jeremy, I got to move on. Listen, I hope you call again. I really appreciate what you had to say and your point of view. So
I will keep listening.
All right, stay in touch.
All right, bye-bye.
Stay in touch. Stephen is calling from Danville, California, listening on the Internet. Hey, Stephen.
Hey, Mike. I actually met you in 2006 in Sacramento when I was running for Congress.
It
was at the impeachment thing at the theater.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
and
okay.
At the very end. So, and I was going to go to San Francisco and meet you, but I just worked too late. I'm an electrician. Mm-hmm. I'm in the union. I've been on the out-of-work list for 2.5 years. I got fired by a Republican employer because I was running for Congress.
Yeah, well, of course.
But what I want to talk about is, friend, I think y'all just don't understand them Southern senators, and if you want to, I'll be your huckleberry.
I hear you.
You know, the screener said you've actually had discussions about a book called The Family.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do a lot of reading about the CIA, the government, Kennedy assassinations, everything else.
Mm-hmm.
This book is an undercurrent that I think is incredibly important for understanding just how crazy these bastards are.
Mm-hmm.
They think they are the ones who are anointed by Christ. They're the powerful ones running the corporations, get rid of the regulations, and we'll just treat these little trade unionist communist guys like the children they deserve to be treated.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you really get the book, and I'm only halfway through it, but I think it truly is an undercurrent in the history of the United States since 1900. And I think it's an important thing to put all this in context because these Southern senators mm-hmm. who think trade unionists are the equivalent of communists, these are people who think Christ has anointed them to rule the world because they're powerful because guess what? They woke up in the lucky sperm club and there they are in the Senate or wherever. Mm-hmm. And they're in these prayer circles.
Yeah, you're not the first one, Stephen, who has suggested strongly that that I get that book, The Family, and I'm going to do it. Stephen, I got to move on because I'm trying to get as many calls in as I can. Thanks, pal. Tom in Bullhead, Arizona, is that right? Hey, Tom.
Yes.
Listening on the internet. Welcome to the program.
Well, I'm honored to talk to you, man. Look, in 1980, stupid was cool and sexy. Republicans took power, and hatred of people who use government for help just thrived, man. Government, by Ronald Reagan's definition, was the problem, remember?
Sure.
Fascists blamed food stamps and welfare for what was wrong with the country.
Right.
Entitlements and welfare were code words for lazy, worthless people taking advantage of the system, which hardworking citizens had to pay for.
Right.
Remember that?
Oh, I do.
Yeah. This started modern-day class warfare. You know,
yeah, and go ahead. I'm sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
Well, phrases were hitting the streets, man. Like that's they're not working because they're lazy and they want to sponge off us working people. They're homeless because they want to be. They're buying alcohol and drugs with their food stamps.
Oh yeah, I remember all that. And what we are reaping now is what those bastards sowed 28 years ago. I hear you loud and clear, Tom. Thanks, man. Let me move on. Robert is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. Yes, my main point was I'm as disgusted, maybe probably even more disgusted with you. I have, aside from the fact I have relatives in Detroit who don't work for the auto industry, but who are going to be caught up in the social chaos that occurs in there when they have 25% unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what just happened is the Republican Party, and it was basically the entire Republican Party, with conscious intent decided, yes, we are going to cause a depression. We are going to hand this to the Democrats. The industrial states, the Midwest, voted against us, so screw them.
Right.
And my proof of it is this. My proof of it, that I looked at the House vote a day or two ago. The House vote, there were only 32 Republicans out of 179 left in the House, 190 something left in the House. Only 32 Republicans in the House who voted for the bailout. And they were from states like Kentucky that makes the Corvette, okay? So they were from places that had American plants. The ones from the other ones didn't care. And this was the same. This was even worse. This blew my mind. 30 of all the Republicans, I think every Democrat voted for it. There might be one that didn't. It's not up on the Senate side yet. But from my analysis of this, every Republican but two, I think Kit Bond and Voinovich, I think were the only two out of 49 Republicans to vote for it. 33 voted against.
Hold on a second, Robert, because I got to take a break. We'll come back in a minute. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
It's good news week. Someone's found a way to get the rotting dead, the will to
say, who's won that race? What's the weather like today?
It's about 10 before the hour. Let's go back to Robert, who called in from Miami. All right, Republicans are forcing a depression. We got that part. Go ahead and finish it up for me, Robert.
I was going to say, of the 35 Republicans voted against it, I think two voted for it, and 13 of them were still gutless. And my guess, knowing McCain, is McCain's one of those. 13 of them were still gutless. They didn't vote. Knowing that the way these procedural things work, that doesn't count as a half a vote for the other. In other words, you need 60 regardless of how many people are voting, so that doesn't help. That doesn't help them. It's hard to explain this. Mm-hmm. But in any case, so they decided to cause a depression. Even the Republican senators who had just been defeated, who this is going to be their last vote,
right,
who it couldn't possibly help or hurt them at all, didn't say, my last vote, I'm going to vote for the country and forget my party. Even they couldn't do it. Not one of the people who are retiring, even Ted Stevens, imagine that, even Ted Stevens, who's just, he's 84, he might not be alive in a couple years, right? His last thing to the country is to vote against this or to not vote. Now, can you imagine the 3 million jobs lost? That's not true. That's the floor, not the ceiling, because
all the restaurants
are going to go to business in those areas.
Right, yeah, the 3 million is a low figure. Robert, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate what you had to say. And what you had to say is scary and very much right on. Let me just mention our crew again tonight. Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and the executive producer, Catherine Bay. Let's go back to your calls. David is calling from China, for God's sake, listening on the Internet. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I've been in China on the coast in Qingdao since June of 2005. I left because I couldn't stand living under the tyranny of Bush and whatever. My work history included 6 years as a local president of UAW Local 1341 up in Tecumseh, Michigan, just about 40 minutes drive from Toledo.
I've been in Tecumseh, yeah.
And my family history is that I come from a large family, but within my mother, my father, my several brothers, we have over 200 years of service in manufacturing, and most of it with General Motors and Ford, but they closed my factory back in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And I can recall one of the most vivid images in my mind, and I just can't get it out of my mind, even before this crisis now, was that I was local president in 1981 during the election, and after Reagan won, I walked into the plant, and I had people mocking me, hey, David, I thought we were supposed to vote for Jimmy Carter. And they just said, like 9-year-old girls, so gleeful, I thought they were going to pee their goddamn, sorry, I thought they were going to pee their pants.
Yeah.
You just can't, I don't know, I mean, and these were religious right-wingers, you know, and Jesus this and Jesus that. I just can't get that image out of my mind. And then to find us here now, I thought I would come back. I thought I'd return in June, July, something like that, because I want to come back. And I'm 68 years old. I wanted to come back and work in union organizing. I guess I probably will. But I just couldn't stand it with Bush there. And I'm really encouraged. I supported Obama, and I'm really encouraged. I said, I can go back now. But I'm frightened. I know you're frightened. I understand what you're saying. I'm frightened.
Yeah, I hear you. David, I got to leave it there, pal, because we're starting to run out of time. But thanks, David. I'm impressed that you're listening to the program in China, for God's sake. Thanks a lot for your comments. Oy. Andy is calling from Denver, listening on the Internet. Hey, Andy.
Hey, I just wanted to go over your math with the opening story with Walmart.
Uh-huh.
You said $54 million. Fine.
Yeah.
Or Okay, 2 million infractions. That's $27 per infraction.
Well, I don't think they, I understand what you're saying. I don't think the court looks at it that way. They're just, you know, they come up with a number, a jury decided on the punitive damage. It's not up to the court. It was up to a jury, and that's what they came up with. Is it fair? No, I don't think so. But
okay, I'm a truck driver, okay? So
right.
Sometimes, you know, if we don't have stuff, a line crossed or an I dotted or a T crossed, you know, or whatever, you know, it costs us $700, you know?
Sure.
That's just, you know what I mean? And for these kinds of infractions, you know, I mean, somebody told me I couldn't go to the bathroom. You know where I'd be going to the bathroom would be right on their on their shoes there, right?
Yeah, I hear you, Andy. Honestly, God, I do. Listen, pal, I got to leave it there because we're just about out of time. Oh, man. I'd like to keep the discussion going, but, you know, we're down to about a minute here. And I don't know. I'm like I said, I am very concerned about what's going to happen tomorrow. Well, at this point, everything. Commodities market, stock market, bond market, financial markets, just everything. And what's going to be weird, at 9:30 tomorrow morning when the stock exchange opens, I usually will switch over to Bloomberg TV News and watch for a while to see, you know, try to get a sense of what's going to happen. I'm almost afraid to turn on Bloomberg tomorrow morning. The two major Asian markets are down 7% and 6% respectively today. That's what that email was about. The Nikkei and the Hang Seng, is that what it's called? And U.S. futures are going to open 350 points down. Hold on to your best friend tomorrow because it just may be a real scary day. I hope nothing happens, man. I hope the stock market, you know, gains 40 points or loses 60 points and everybody goes, woo, dodged a bullet. But I don't think that's what's going to happen. So let's try to get together tomorrow night. Let's try to get together tomorrow night. Thanks for hanging out. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova Emma.